The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's President's Day in the U.S., so there's no classes today for the college. And I guess since it is President's Day, I pulled a little bit of information from our book club, the book we're reading on Abraham Lincoln, and we'll get into that in the second segment. The students here at Edstone, by the way, are at Portsmouth. As we speak, they're going to see Nelson's Victory. This is a replica. It's not actual size, but I've put it here right at the front of our radio desk alongside our Trumpet Daily mug. That's new as well. We got just a few of those in last week. So a few more props here in our cozy Edstone studio. We went to Portsmouth, as some of you might remember, last summer. And had some audio journals from our trip that were well received last June. So that was something they had. The students had two or three choices, and at my urging, they opted for Portsmouth. Lots of really amazing sights down at the southern tip of England. So I'm sure they'll make the most of their field trip today. Over the weekend, we had some pretty good numbers from the television program here in the UK. Last week, Jude's Urgent Prophecy with the trickle-in through the rest of the week. We ended with 172 requests for the Jude booklet. I think we offered the Peter booklet as well, 172 in total. And over this weekend, we had a program, Are You Watching World Events? That was based somewhat on the trumpet brief that we sent out last Tuesday or Wednesday, I think it was. So that brought in 168 responses. So with additional text message requests and snail mail requests this next week, we'll probably surpass last week's strong numbers as well. So some really good numbers with these new programs that we've been producing so far this year. Coming up this weekend, of course, we have the Belfast Pack, and Edwin Trables mentioned to me this morning that of the 58 non-members to register for this Pack event, 14 of them registered to attend last year. So we've got some repeat customers, which is, of course, very encouraging as well. Hopefully, we'll see some of the same people that we saw a little over a year ago for that first Pack in Belfast. Well, there's a lot that's been going on since Friday's broadcast. Sometimes it seems like two or three weeks in between the Friday and Monday programs. Attorney General Barr in the United States, he's come under a withering attack from the radical left, and that just does make you wonder if there's some players from the radical left, the administrative state, the deep state. It makes you wonder if some of them are getting a little bit worried. Of course, the press made a big story last week out of the Attorney General, what he said about President Trump's tweets. And we'll have a little more to say on that a little bit later. But suffice it to say, they are ganging up on this Attorney General. So many Democrats calling upon him to step down. I'll get to a story here in just a moment where all these former federal prosecutors have signed this petition calling for William Barr's removal. Sally Yates, she had a piece at the Washington Post. Trump thinks that the Justice Department is his personal grudge squad. He's using the DOJ to further his political aims. He's weaponizing the DOJ, says Sally Yates. This is the same Sally Yates who was primarily responsible for bringing down Mike Flynn early on in the Trump presidency. His family was threatened. He had to pay millions of dollars in legal fees. And of course, that's still ongoing. That's been going on for years. And he's awaiting his sentencing. Well, I guess Friday, in addition to the announcement that was made about Andy McCabe, the Department of Justice also said that they're going to have an outside, I guess, investigator look into the Mike Flynn case. So, as I say, lots and lots going on since the last broadcast. This from the New York Times today. It says more than 1,100 former federal prosecutors and Justice Department officials called on Attorney General William Barr on Sunday to step down after he intervened last week to lower the Justice Department's sentencing recommendation for President Trump's longtime friend, Roger Stone. So for him to come in and lower the recommendation, Stone has to go to jail for 9 years. I think I heard over the weekend where convicted rapists on average go to jail for 4 years, and murderers on average go to jail for 13 years. And so here are all of these radicals who hate Donald Trump and anyone associated with him so much that they're saying about Roger Stone, the one who lied to Congress, that he ought to go to jail for 9 years. 9 years. It says here the letter's signatories include Donald Ayer, a former deputy attorney general under President George Bush, and about 50 former U.S. attorneys. Project Democracy, a nonprofit legal group, gathered the signatures from Justice Department alumni and said it would collect more. That's the New York Times just saying in passing, look, this has been put together by Project Democracy. That's a nonprofit legal group. What do you know about Project Democracy? Well, nothing, unless you did a Google search in addition to reading the New York Times piece. You see it right at the top of their website that their goal is to oppose the policies of President Donald Trump. So this is a radical leftist group. And of course, the New York Times is relying upon it as a very reliable source. Oh, yes. They're opposed to the policies of President Donald Trump. That's the Protect Democracy Project. So they're on the hunt. They're looking for any left-wing attorney in the nation to see if they can get them to sign a list saying that Bill Barr ought to be removed. The Times says here in May, Project Democracy gathered signatures for a letter that said the Mueller report presented enough evidence to charge Mr. Trump with obstruction of justice. Were that an option? Now, that's fascinating, isn't it? The Mueller report, which says the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. And then, as you probably know, the Mueller report also said, you know, we're not going to come out and make a statement as to whether there was obstruction of justice or not. And then Bill Barr came out later and said, there's no underlying crime. So how could there be any obstruction of justice? But this left-wing group, Project Democracy Project, or Protect Democracy Project, they came out after the Mueller report was released and said, well, hey, you've got plenty to go here on an obstruction charge. Here are all these left-wing attorneys. They're a dime a dozen. They're all over the place. And they're very much concerned now because they don't control the levers of power, because you have a president that's exposing them and you have an attorney general who's investigating them. That's in the New York Times. There was another one in the Washington Post. I might come to this one a little bit later. But here again, people that are on the attack because they're very nervous. This Washington Post piece quotes this former FBI official saying, "The power to investigate is the power to destroy." Isn't it amazing? These people who investigated, they had no limits. They had an unlimited budget. They investigated for years. And in some cases, see Mike Flynn and Roger Stone, those investigations continue. Those investigations and sentences, they continue. But here they are now saying, look, this president and this DOJ, they have no business investigating anyone. Why, to investigate anyone would be to weaponize the DOJ. These are the same people that have just been doing it, and they're still doing it. They did it before Donald Trump won the election, and they in the case of spying, they continued right on through to September, October of 2017, lying to the FISA court every single time. Every single time they had to reapply, they lied. And now here they are getting a little bit nervous. Well, Andy McCabe, he can breathe easy at least for a little while. Because we heard Friday that the DOJ was not going to go forward and to indict this former FBI deputy director for lying under oath, which just goes to show, if you're going to lie to the FBI or the DOJ, you better make sure that you have a job at the FBI or the DOJ. Because the Department of Justice simply will not tolerate lying under any circumstances unless it's in-house. If it goes on within the department, then they're carefully shielded. They're carefully protected. If George Papadopoulos, on the other hand, if he gets mixed up on a date of when something happened during an interview with an FBI agent, well, he goes to jail. That's just the way that it works. The inspector general, that would be Michael Horowitz. He's not a right-wing conservative by any means, but he's the one that recommended Andy McCabe for federal prosecution. And McCabe admitted to lying to the FBI. He's committed at least two or three lies under oath. And he's able to skate free, quite unlike Mike Flynn, George Papadopoulos, Paul Manafort, Roger Stone, and on it goes. Conveniently enough, once that announcement was made on Friday evening, Andy McCabe went straight to CNN. That's where he works. And so he had one of his friends at CNN, Anderson Cooper, who asked him for his reaction on the DOJ deciding not to go forward with the indictment. This is clip one.
It's obviously a huge sigh of relief. It's been an incredibly stressful and trying time for my family. And so I'm incredibly glad to have that behind us finally. I'm, of course, glad that the department came around finally to making the right decision. But I'll tell you, it's just an absolute disgrace that they let this thing drag on as long as they did and put my family through what we've gone through over the last 2 years. And they should be, I'm just disgusted at the way the whole thing's been handled.
He's disgusted, and his family has suffered for 2 years while the DOJ decided whether or not it was going to go forward with any kind of charges. It really is disgusting, to use his word, to see just the utter contempt that these people have for those that have committed lesser crimes than they have. Papadopoulos, I won't go through the list again. Andy McCarthy, he has a piece at National Review. He said over the weekend, why not indict McCabe on felony false statement charges? That's the question being pressed by incensed Trump supporters After all, the constitutional guarantee of equal justice under the law is supposed to mean that McCabe gets the same quality of justice afforded to the sad sacks pursued with unseemly zeal by McCabe's FBI and Robert Mueller's prosecutors. It says George Papadopoulos was convicted of making a trivial false statement about a date of a meeting. Think about that. He misstated the date of a meeting, and they wouldn't let it go. This individual, Andy McCabe, would not let it go. He had to go after Papadopoulos. He had to go after Papadopoulos' family. It says here, Roger Stone was convicted of obstruction long after the special counsel knew there was no Trump-Russia conspiracy. They kept the investigation going, even when they knew there was no underlying crime. And they kept picking off Trump's people right and left because of a misstatement. Because of a misstatement to Congress or an obstruction of a witness of some kind. It says here, and in the case of Mike Flynn's false statements, convictions, as McCabe himself acknowledged to the House Intelligence Committee, even the agents who interviewed him did not believe he intentionally misled them. Even the agents who interviewed Flynn didn't believe he lied, and yet they got him on a lie somehow or some way, and he awaits sentencing. Presuming the case in some way isn't overturned now that it's being looked at again by Bill Barr's DOJ. So to listen to these people with absolutely just an utter lack of self-awareness, these others, they don't matter. It doesn't matter what you do to Mike Flynn or to his family or his. It doesn't matter if you threaten his son. It doesn't matter if he has to mortgage his house to pay for all those legal fees. It doesn't matter if it goes on for years and years and years. But for Andy McCabe to get on CNN over the weekend and to sing the sad song, look at how hard this has been on my family. It shows us a little bit of something about human nature. And just a lack of love and empathy. A lack of outgoing concern for others. And certainly, there's no consistent standard of justice here. Two tiers. One for the insiders that are carefully protected. And then the others. Conservatives, Trump supporters, ordinary Americans. Listen to what Anderson Cooper said about how this went on for a couple of years as he, again, defends his colleague, Andy McCabe, clip two.
Yeah, I mean, to have it drag on like this, is there any actual reason why it would have dragged on for 2 years other than to keep you kind of twisting in the wind?
This is Anderson Cooper asking, why would an investigation just go on for 2 years? That seems so unnecessary. The Mueller investigation went on for 32 months. And then look at what sprung from it. All of these process crimes. And then the impeachment. And then the trial. That's only just a few weeks removed. We're a few weeks removed from that. And then, like I said last week, here they're already because of a tweet. Now they're already discussing another impeachment. It's nonstop. It won't stop. Here again is Anderson Cooper on President Trump. Not Obama, but President Trump weaponizing the Department of Justice. Clip three.
It fits into the larger theme of weaponizing the Department of Justice against perceived enemies or just people the president doesn't like. They could have been holding it because they were afraid of what the president would say about it. It could have also just been, you know, just to leave you twisting in the wind, paying up legal fees and having the stress and this sort of Damocles hanging over you.
Yeah, the sword was hanging over McCabe. And yet, 32 months, $35 million, dozens of FBI agents, 2,800 subpoenas, 500 search and seizure warrants, arresting Roger Stone at gunpoint. Remember that? 230 orders for communications records. 50 orders authorizing use of pen registers. 13 requests to foreign governments. These are the Obama people. These are the Obama holdovers. This is the investigation or multiple investigations that Sally Yates and Andy McCabe, Jim Comey, John Brennan, James Clapper, they're all for this. They're all for this. But certainly not investigating anyone on the other side. Here's Andy McCabe. And again, you talk about the pot calling the kettle black. This is clip four.
We don't expect to live in a country where the perceived political enemies of the president suddenly become the subjects of criminal investigations in a pursuit to, you know, to throw political enemies in jail.
Just a total lack of self-awareness. It's pretty amazing what we're witnessing. And again, it's not like his lying is even under dispute. This final clip here, you see both of them, they just can't even believe that people would consider Andy McCabe to be a liar. And it's right there in the IG report. The watchdog. The independent investigation. But listen to these two and see how there is absolutely not one hint of remorse in this man who lied to Horowitz's agents, who lied regarding the Clinton investigation, who leaked, who used Lisa Page to get the leak out in public. Here's clip five.
And I spent 21 years in the FBI as a part of an institution that prides itself on fidelity, bravery, and integrity. And to be removed from that organization and unfairly branded a liar, because that was the desired outcome by the president, has just been one of the most sickening and demeaning experiences of my life. It's horrendous, and it is unfortunate that, having listened to propaganda like Fox News, there's there are many people in this country that will believe that forever. I can't do anything about that except continue to live and to speak out in the way I've tried to do over the last year, to stand up for what I believe in, and to tell the truth, however inconvenient for the president or anybody else.
You know, one of the points that Andy McCarthy makes in his piece is that when they are finally confronted with the facts from Horowitz's report that you did lie and you lied twice under oath, then McCabe and his defenders will say, well, I didn't really mean to. See, in my heart, I didn't lie. But they don't give that kind of latitude to Papadopoulos, who got the date wrong. No, there it's very much black and white. You broke the law, and so you should go to jail. As I say, it's not even a point of dispute that McCabe lied, and yet there he is on CNN saying that because this is the president's desire, that I'm branded as a liar, and Fox News is going to run with it. I can't do anything about the propaganda, and some Americans will believe it. Truth fails, like the Bible says. Not a hint of remorse. No coming out and saying, you know what? After some additional reflection, I'm thankful that I'm not being pressed here and there's no indictment, but we really shouldn't have gone that hard after Papadopoulos and Stone and Manafort and all the rest of them. But there's nothing like that. McCarthy says the FBI's former deputy director, though he undeniably misled investigators, remains a commentator at CNN. In the meantime, Papadopoulos is a felon, convicted and briefly imprisoned for misleading investigators, while Flynn and Stone are awaiting sentencing on their false statement charges. He says that covers both tiers of our justice system. A two-tiered justice system. The battle, as I said on Friday's program, I think the title was The Battle for Justice. And that's what you see in some of these articles that we collected from over the weekend. A collision's coming. It's a war right now. It's a war between the administrative state and Donald Trump's presidency. And President Trump's DOJ is exactly that. It's an extension of his presidency. And his enemies are going to fight him on that and say that he has no business as the chief law enforcement official in the United States of even having talks to Bill Barr. They're compromised. Barr needs to be fired. The president needs to be impeached. The collision is coming. It's already here, really. But look at these people who lie and lie and lie. And then they get on national television and say, I can't believe people think I'm a liar. Sam was saying this morning how, just in reading Malachi's message, when he was a teenager and seeing the language in there about the lies going on, the strong delusion, and the references to these evil individuals, a man of sin, guilty of lying wonders, a giant fraud. And as he said, Sam, that is, he said it was really a bit of a challenge to even accept that it was that bad, really? And yet with just a little bit of passage of time, with more evidence that continues to turn up, he referred to Raising the Ruins, which of course came along quite a few years after Malachi's message. But then the farther away from it, you look back on history and you see just how spot on the prophecy was. My father's talked here more recently about that Antiochus spirit and how that his aim is to blot out Israel. You can look at America Under Attack from 2013 and again see some very strong condemnation of this Antiochus and how that he lies. Look at how accurate these descriptions, whether in Malachi's message or America Under Attack, look at how accurate they are now. When you see just what's on CNN over the weekend. You know, there's the people, as we touched on last week, who would suggest that the president should never, ever tweet because he's just too unpredictable. He's too unhinged. Somebody needs to get in there and change his Twitter password so that he can't respond to the sentencing recommendation of Roger Stone. 9 years. Yes, indeed. He needs to go to jail for 9 years, Judge. There's never Trumpers, the ones who despise, they consider themselves Republicans, but they despise this president. And then you could say there's the never tweeters. We've come up with a new phrase. The ones that might support the president, but who say he should never tweet. And a lot of the reason they say that is because they think if the president didn't tweet, that then the left would embrace him more, that they or at the very least they wouldn't attack him. And what they don't see, what they don't acknowledge is that this movement, this Antiochus spirit, whether he tweets or not, the object is to destroy, to blot out. Whether he exposes it or not, they will not stop in trying to take him out. The attacks are going to come whether he tweets about Roger Stone or not. That's what the never tweeters don't recognize. Of course, we're not saying that every single tweet comes with our hearty endorsement. But as I said last week, what would be covered up were it not for his tweets? He is, after all, exposing it, and the tweets do make them especially angry. But that anger is not going to subside if he takes a vacation from Twitter. Look at the call to the Ukrainian president, Zelensky. That didn't involve Twitter. That involved a phone call. One the president said was a perfect call. There was no quid pro quo. And yet the radical left, they found one. They saw it. They know the motivations. They can divine motives. And here they have no interest in the phone call between Rosenstein and Eric Holder 2 days before the special counsel was appointed in 2017. No leakers from that phone call. No Venmans that come forward and say, why was Rosenstein calling the former attorney general, Obama's wingman, just before Bob Mueller was appointed? The goal is to blot him out, to overturn the 2016 election, to prevent Trump's re-election this November. And so the war continues, and it is building to the prophesied civil war, Ezekiel 4 and 5. It's right there in the Bible. This will not end well, as my father says in that recent Trumpet magazine. It's not going to end well for either side. But as to McCabe and the reason he wasn't indicted, Trey Gowdy on Fox News yesterday, I think he had some interesting insights as to why it didn't happen. This is clip six.
Well, Andy McCabe is not being indicted for a very discreet fact pattern, which is simply the leaking of information to bolster his own credibility during the Clinton investigation. That's it. And we should have known weeks ago when they were having trouble getting an indictment. If you're having trouble getting an indictment, then there's no way you're going to get a conviction. You've seen a change in the U.S. Attorney's Office in the District of Columbia. So he escapes indictment for that narrow fact pattern. But that has nothing to do with FISA and the initiation of Russia and any other potential misconduct that Andy McCabe may have engaged in. That's a really narrow, discrete fact pattern that he's not being indicted for.
So the two lies to federal agents, the narrow fact pattern, as Trey Gowdy says there, of course, implying that there's much more to come. And there were a few rumblings over the weekend. I think some conservatives that were sounding pretty hopeful that from what they're hearing, there's a lot more that's being uncovered with respect to FISA abuse and the illegal spying and all that. In other words, Bill Barr may have just conceded on this point because he has much bigger fish to fry. We'll see. We will see. But it's an all-out war politically. And it'll continue right through to the election this November and after as well. Now, God's hand, of course, is evident in all of this, because we're in the midst of a temporary resurgence, and it is a sight to behold, this pushback coming from Jeroboam, this pushback against that spirit of Antiochus that's still so strong. It's like a shadow government. I'm going to have more on that in today's Trumpet Brief. All these holdovers, and then even the ones that aren't held over, they're still calling into the DOJ, Eric Holder. In May of 2017, is Rod Rosenstein available, please? This is the former Attorney General of Barack Obama, Eric Holder, on the line. And yet the press, nobody seems to care about that phone call. That's perfectly normal, I guess. Axios had an article yesterday as well about President Trump's run of good luck. They just can't really understand why, amid all of these problems that they see, that the president keeps winning And they boil it down to the fact that, well, he's extremely lucky. We know better than that. It says he's also benefited from a run of extraordinary good luck. It says Trump's top advisors privately marvel at how he flirts with disaster only to catch a big break, whether it's the Iranians botching their response to his military attack or Democrats embarrassing themselves in Iowa on impeachment eve. It says Trump started the year by killing Iran's top military leader, Soleimani, in a move resisted by previous presidents that imperiled U.S. troops in the Middle East and could have provoked war with Iran. Instead, Iranians shot down a civilian airliner and lied about it, clumsily undercutting the regime at home and on the world stage. So, a win for the president, in other words. It says on February 6th, Trump said the U.S. had killed, another al-Qaeda leader in Yemen. It says Trump signed the Phase 1 trade deal with China and the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement that replaces NAFTA. The economy and employment recovery, it says. Democrats are on the defensive after Trump's impeachment acquittal and Iowa debacle. It says a Democrat socialist, Senator Bernie Sanders, is surging in the race, causing the establishment to flip out. The fracturing field could mean a long fight that would put the eventual nominee in an even deeper hole against the incumbent's machine. It says some economists think that post-coronavirus, a recovery wave, will push an economic surge closer to the election. Axios says, finally, the bottom line, Trump is enjoying the same lucky breaks in politics that he enjoyed in birth and business. So the man is just extremely lucky. He's just lucky. He was born lucky. He was lucky in business. And now he's the lucky president. In fact, it's a temporary resurgence, as it says in 2 Kings 14. It's not going to last, though, forever. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Well, here we are broadcasting live on President's Day in the United States of America. So no classes for AC students on the Edmond campus or here at Edstone. And lately, we've been discussing Abraham Lincoln in our book club because we're going through Carl Sandburg's book, his biography on Lincoln. And within that biography, you learn that Lincoln really did study the Bible. He read lots of things about the Bible as well. And yet Abraham Lincoln never did attend a particular church or denomination regularly. He was quoted as saying that he couldn't quite see it, which is a little vague. I wish he would have elaborated more on why specifically he didn't attend a regular church or a regular church service. He just said he couldn't quite see it, but you read Sandburg and see that besides reading and studying the Bible, he read a lot of things about the Bible as well. He read one book where the author talked about fossils and the rock layers of the earth that show, quote, the world was millions of years in the making, that God practiced at making many other animals before at last he made man. And while we wouldn't necessarily say that God was practicing, but you certainly understand if you read the Bible with an open mind that there's a long gap between what's described in Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1 and verse 2. And how that what's happening in Genesis 1 was in fact a recreation of the earth to prepare it for mankind, human life. Mr. Armstrong, of course, talks about this and the incredible human potential and mystery of the ages. But it's fascinating to see what Lincoln was concluding, just even in his own personal study. Sandburg says, and yet Lincoln read the Bible closely, knew it from cover to cover, even though he didn't attend a regular church. He read the Bible closely, he knew it from cover to cover, was familiar with its stories and its poetry, quoted from it in his talks to juries. He used it in court. And later, of course, he quoted from it often as president, as a politician, in political campaigns, it says, in his speeches, and in his letters. There were evangelical Christian church members who felt he was a solemn, earnest, religious man. They felt like he was a religious man, churchgoers. Now, as he got deeper into politics, there were a lot of rivals in the political world that criticized him and said that because he didn't go to church regularly, that he was an infidel, that he wasn't a believer. But he certainly did study the Bible. When he heard from his half-brother that his dad was on his deathbed, Lincoln told his brother, he wasn't there when his dad died, but he wrote to him and said, tell dad to put his trust in his maker. Tell dad to have faith in his maker. Sandburg says that when death was close by, Lincoln often used Bible language. When physical death was close, he referred to the Bible. He looked into the Bible. There was one lady on her deathbed. Sandburg relates this in his book. And she was about to die. Lincoln was there and she asked him if he would quote or read some passages from the Bible. I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago, but while there was an attendant there who ran off to get a copy of the Bible, Lincoln just started quoting Psalm 23 from memory. He told this woman, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. That's what he quoted to this woman while she was about to die. But as I say, political rivals, they criticized Lincoln for not going to church. They said he wasn't a Christian. Some even went so far as to say he was an infidel. All because he didn't attend a church service. But there's this awesome section at the end of volume one of Sandburg's series, this woman by the name of Mrs. Rankin, who defended Abraham Lincoln against that charge of being an infidel, a non-believer. And she said about Lincoln, "The scriptures unfolded before me with a deeper and more logical appeal through these new experiences than anything else I could find to turn to or even before had found in them." This is her quoting what she said Lincoln told her. Lincoln said, "Probably it is to be my lot to go on in a twilight, feeling and reasoning my way through life, as questioning, doubting Thomas did." And then regarding churchgoers and various denominations, she said, Lincoln said, "They all claim to be Christians and interpret their several creeds as infallible ones. I doubt the possibility or propriety of settling the religion of Jesus Christ in the models of man-made creeds and dogmas." So I think what he's indicating there to her is that you can't quite fit Jesus Christ into the Christian models that are all around us, and they're all in disagreement. They all disagree with one another. This Mrs. Rankin said that Lincoln didn't want to get involved in the debatable wranglings and divided denominations. He saw all these denominations and how that they were divided. They all read from the same Bible. Remember, he said that about the North and South in the second inaugural, that both sides, the North and the South, they read from the same Bible, but they both can't be right. Here they're trying to kill each other. I mean, there has to be one. Sure, you can always say there's fault on both sides, but look, there has to be one that's right and one that's wrong if there's two going in opposing directions. It says, "If the church would ask simply for assent to the Savior's statement of the substance of the law, 'Thou shalt love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself,'" Lincoln said, "that church would I gladly unite with." So according to Mrs. Rankin, he was basically saying that, look, if there was a church that was out there teaching what Jesus Christ taught, then I'd join it. Last summer, we referred to that story. I think it was at Fox News where this Lincoln Bible was discovered. This is from June of last year. And that Fox News story says Lincoln's faith has long been debated over the years. He was known as the village atheist as a young man, but he gave one of the most explicitly religious speeches ever by a president during his second inaugural address. Scholars say the new discovery helped solidify his faith in his later years. This is a Lincoln Bible that was discovered from later in his life. Well, it gives some history about this book from 1864 and what was happening during the Civil War at that time. And then it says, finally, "a few months later, after receiving another copy of the Bible as a gift, Lincoln wrote, 'In regard to this great book,'" this is what Lincoln said late in his life about the Holy Bible. He said, "In regard to this great book, I have but to say it is the best gift God has given to man. All the good the Savior gave to the world was communicated through this book. But for it, we could not know, right from wrong, all things most desirable for man's welfare here and hereafter are to be found portrayed in the Bible." That's from that Fox story just last summer. And so there you have it, a little bit more about Lincoln and his study of God's Word, Lincoln and the Bible. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a few emails that have come in over the last few days. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Some feedback here from you listeners. This one says, I really enjoy seeing you behind the mic. I'm so glad to have one place to hear what is really going on behind the scenes. Can you, will you follow in Rush Limbaugh's chair? Wow. Says, well, that is not our mission. Well, that's right. But all the same, all your professionalism and the team's hard work is needed. I pray God will strengthen and energize you and keep you. Another one here just says simply, my first time. So we're getting some first-time listeners, which is encouraging. Another one says, thankful to hear the Trumpet Daily from North Carolina. Another one says, Trumpet Daily is a wonderful light in a dark world of world news. Another listener says, I'll keep this short, but I just encourage you to keep up the great reporting. Thanks very much. Another one commented on the program being very informative. And then this one here, it says, slightly off topic. This is in regards to the, what was the lady's name? Topeka, or Tomika maybe, the one that was the jury foreman for the Roger Stone trial, and how that there was an excellent article in the Stack, by the way, from Jonathan Turley, who talked about just the sham of an investigation or trial that was. But this listener says here, this is slightly off topic, but I frequent my local KFC here in the UK, more than I should, he has in parentheses. And two of the staff members there have been called for jury service in the past few months in separate cases. Both cases were extremely serious and involved sexual abuse of children. And that is all these KFC staff will say. In other words, they're discreet about it because they're supposed to be. And he says here, a couple of 20-year-old uneducated kids know how serious jury duty is. And yet this woman, who is a lawyer, apparently does not. It says she deserves to have the book thrown at her. Here she pretended not to know anything about Roger Stone. And then she's going and slamming the president on social media, cheering when Roger Stone is convicted. There's a few that responded to the TV program that we had over the weekend. Have you been watching world events? This listener says, this reminds me of the Key of David program from 2001, which was a three-part series discussing the sign of the end. It says in it, Mr. Flurry was discussing the 70 AD siege of Jerusalem in some detail from the works of Josephus, a type of what is coming, multiplied by over 100 for the populations of Israel. I can barely grasp the carnage at the Battle of the Somme, Verdun, Stalingrad, etc. The mind can barely grasp the destruction. We all need God's protection, and Israel and the world needs to know what is coming because it is truly terrible and mind-boggling. Just read the works of Josephus for a preview. Another one here says, it's best to know what is going on in the world. We should not really hide from it. This is God's will, and whatever God has planned, it will be done. Another one responding to the TV show over the weekend says, great stuff. Would you like to be YouTube friends? Well, yes, I would. Consider it done. We are YouTube friends. Another one here says, overall, I love the work of the PCG. I happen to have a show Friday nights on a local Christian radio station, and sometimes I dare to report and cite and praise what I call the Trumpet News Service, which really is excellent. But also, and maybe more so, I appreciate the PCG's edification of stuff for my personal walk. Anyway, I want to encourage you and all of your colleagues, and thank you all for the work that you do. and the services you provide, even for free, it's a huge blessing to the world. Another one here in response to the trumpet brief last week. Have you been watching world events? It says, that is an eye-opener. Everything is going on that will lead right up to the return of Jesus Christ. I pray we are all ready for it. Thanks so much for all you do in helping get this out to all of us. We need all that we can get. And then finally, it says, I just read your trumpet brief this morning. Thank you for helping us watch and pray every day. Your Trumpet Daily Show is my companion every night while washing dishes. What tools, radio and internet, God has given us to keep up, or to keep us, those who have ears to hear, abreast of world events. It says, finally, these beginning of sorrows ultimately point to the most important and majestic event ever to occur in the universe, the return of Jesus Christ. Well, that's all that we have time for on today's show. We certainly thank you for joining us today. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll see you tomorrow.